And casting from Chicago, Los Angeles, and Sydney, you're listening to this week's FX Podcast from FXGuide.com.
Thanks for downloading and listening to this week's FX Podcast. I'm John Montgomery. Before we begin, I want to take a moment to thank everyone who's written in with nice words about our new podcast feature on the website. We thought they might be successful. We kind of underestimated how people would really enjoy listening to them. Maybe underestimated the amount of time we all spend sitting in front of the computer waiting for renders or doing work while we can listen to music or other things. So again, thanks for sending us the nice comments. If you happen to have any ideas for future podcasts, be sure to drop us a line. You can use the Contact Us link at the top of the homepage and send us some feedback. Speaking of future podcasts, coming up in the next several weeks, we're going to have a look at Motion's 2.0's FX plug architecture, which Apple wrote to allow programmers to access the GPUs in various graphic cards to help speed the processing. We're also going to talk to a couple Smoke editors who've been using the Smoke software since the early days of beta, and they'll fill us in on some of their favorites as well as some things that you need to look out for. And we'll also be talking a little bit about the image processing pipeline in Autodesk's new Toxic product. We'll take a look at some of the pixel purity tests they did before rendering. And again, just take a look at some of the underlying architecture in that product. But let's get done with this week's podcast first. This week, Mike Seymour talks with Marco Pellini of Digital Film Tools. Marco's president of that company and also a senior compositor at Digital Filmworks. The Film Tools division makes a variety of plugins. They do some camera and optical effects to simulate actual real-world lens properties and compositing operations. There's a set of color grading tools, as well as a set of plugins that's geared specifically towards compositing tasks that you might do. So without further ado, let's go down to Mike Seymour in Sydney. Mike?
Okay, thanks, John. So on the line we have Marco. Marco, how are you?
Good, good. You?
Terrific. Thanks so much for joining us here at FX Guide. Where are you calling us from?
We're calling from Los Angeles, California, United States.
And so you're basically a compositor who's also president of Digital Film Tools. Can you give us an explanation of how that works or how it came about?
Sure. I'm the senior compositor at Digital Filmworks, where we do feature film effects for a lot of great films. And about 5-6 years ago, myself and one of the partners of Digital Filmworks started Digital Film Tools to take a lot of the techniques and proprietary software that we use in our feature film work and make it available to the general public.
Great. So, I mean, you guys have done a lot of good films. We were talking before, The Terminal, Longest Yard, Ring 2, and I think you said the company was just doing a film by Ivan Reitman's son at the moment, is that right?
Yeah, Jason Reitman, and it's called Thank You for Smoking.
But all of that is separate, if you like, from Digital Film Tools, which is the products that you can get as plugins and as Sparks.
That's correct.
So let's talk about that set of plugins, because I love these. I use them myself. I'd like to start by talking about 55mm, and the reason I'd like to start there is, for my money, a lot of plugins had become, I don't know, sort of eye candy. They gave great demo, but they weren't actually very useful. And I was really thrilled when I came across 55mm because they seem to be very much tools for digital cinematography. And by that, I mean they're very photographic in nature. Is that a fair representation?
Exactly. And as effects artists ourselves, we use other people's plugins as well. And, for the type of work that we do, it's in our regular feature film work, it's meant to be seamless. So we're not into here's an effect, but, you know, making effects look like effects. If you don't see our work, we did our job right. So our concentration has always been towards useful tools for people who do this type of work. And it really branched out to the home photographic user, all the way up to the high-end film user. So, we personally don't use the kind of eye candy type special effects. So, we've concentrated on, designing those kind of useful tools.
Yeah, I think that really shows. I mean, the most obvious thing is you can grade in terms of printer lights and stuff. So, that's obviously a very traditional lab way of looking at things.
Well, and yeah, and again, this is we do a lot of color grading, and we were working on a title sequence for The Clearing. It was a Robert Redford film. He didn't direct it, but he was in it. And we did the title sequence, and we did the our normal color grading, and I believe Technicolor was the lab, and they did some additional timing on it, but they wanted to wanted us to do the exact same timing that they did in the lab so that it could be completely digital. And, you know, we came up with that software for in-house use to be able to grade in printer lights just like they do at the lab. So, you know, that was born out of a tool that we needed, you know, in necessity for our own production work, and then we then made it available to everybody else.
And by the same token, you have the Roscoe filters, which basically, you know, you have a whole set of filters that you can be dialed in exactly the way as if you're putting them in on set. Which, how hard was it to get those filters to actually be accurate to the on set ones?
Well, you know, we did a lot of initial work ourselves, you know, trying to reverse engineer what they had done with their colors. And, you know, we finally said, you know what, this is their stuff. This is, it's all their naming conventions. Let's just approach them and see if we can work out a deal with them. So, you know, we had done a lot of work, and they supplied us with a certain amount of information, which we then needed to take back and make it adaptable for, you know, working in RGB space. You know, essentially we took their, each of these gels has a spectral curve, and we took their spectral curve information, which they provided us, and converted that to RGB. And, you know, this we did it for Roscoe, and we also did it for GAM Color, who makes a, you know, a competing set of gels. And, you know, just like anything, because there's such a large amount of these gels, it was just at a certain point, once we developed the method, it was just a question of just doing the work to get them all converted over.
Now, some of the plugins are, I mean, quite strong effects in the sense that they're quite visual, like the bleach bypass and infrared, night vision, and the cross-processing stuff, all of which are great looks. So you've developed up those kind of ones, but I'd like to swing around to two in particular that are slightly more complex but really interesting photographically. One is light and the other one is ozone. Can you tell us about light, first of all?
Sure. Well, you know, light, again, I used to do a lot of shooting, commercial shooting, a number of years ago, and you know, we were always pulling out cookies and gobos for the lights to, you know, create patterns to make it more visually interesting. And you know, we were doing some of this work to spice up some of the shots we were doing for some of our films. And you know, I finally sat down and said, we have this particular method for adding the light. Let's come up with a number of different patterns that we could use to add them to the shot. So that's where light came from. So we kind of had this in-house method of creating light and glows, and just kind of extended it to this more photographic, you know, technique of adding light or patterns after the image has been shot.
So what we're talking about, things like Venetian blinds or doors or flowers, ferns, clouds, those sort of things might be on a wall behind somebody is probably a good example.
Exactly, yeah. Exactly. And you know, normally, you know, there's a lot of guys who are running and gunning, and they don't have a whole lot of time when they're shooting, because it takes time. They have to have the extra flags and gobos to, you know, to put up on the wall. And so sometimes it's not a question of not knowing how to do it when they're shooting. They just don't have time, or they don't have the equipment. And, you know, we end up putting in post what normally should have been done, or what would have been better to done, have been done in, you know, practical photography. But, you know, we can easily do this later and have a lot more control.
So that brings me to ozone, which is probably the most fascinating, and based on the digital, or the zone system, it wasn't digital in those days, of Ansel Adams, the 11 discrete zones. Can you just walk us through that? Because if you're not familiar with that, it takes a bit of understanding. If you are familiar with it, people, I think, will jump on it straight away.
Well, you know, the Ansel Adams zone system was really a combination of metering and ways of taking of exposure, but it was also a darkroom technique. So it wasn't just an in-camera technique. It was a combination of lab and shooting, to achieve that. So essentially, Ansel Adams' zone system breaks the image up into 11 different zones, which equate to different f-stops. And the whole idea of the system was to be able to squeeze out as much detail in all the different zones, whether they be shadows, midtones, or highlights, in the finished picture. So that was a combination of metering and exposing a certain way, and then later a combination of dodging and burning in the darkroom to bring out certain amounts of shadow detail and certain amounts of highlight detail. So his particular images, were really, back then, our version now of high dynamic range, except he was doing it, years and years in the past. So, we adapted that technique and figured out the various zones, and they're, kind of split off into f-stops. And essentially what our plugin does is it's almost like giving you the darkroom part of it, of the zone system, to manipulate. So you've got the various zones, and those zones can be manipulated, so you can isolate and correct each of these zones separately. And the great thing about it is that you can see the result of all 11 color corrections live without committing to any one of them. So you can be adjusting the highlights, the midtones, the shadows, and all the various gradations in between to get the finished look.
Yeah, I used it recently on a thunderstorm shot, and I sort of basically moved through a color palette as I went through the zones. So I was doing both color and sort of contrast things. And I kept on thinking to myself, I could do this in a flame, but it would take me ages to set it up. It was great having it as one single plugin.
Right, and it allows you to, it's almost essentially like having being in a DaVinci room with, in a sense, somewhat with the power windows. We're not drawing shapes, but we're able to isolate these various areas of the screen, whether the isolation be based on luminance, red, green, blue, cyan, magenta, and yellow. I mean, you really can notch out a particular portion of the frame and adjust only that area.
Which, of course, brings us to the point you raised earlier about bit depth. What sort of range of latitude can you actually process on?
Currently, we can process in both 8 and 16 bit.
So now, the plugins, these ones are available for, let's see, After Effects. Will you run me through them? After Effects and what else?
After Effects, Final Cut Pro, Combustion. I mean, pretty much any of the hosts that accept After Effects plugins we're compatible with. It runs in Photoshop, and then same again. It works in other particular hosts that support Photoshop plugins. It runs on the discrete Flint Flame Inferno systems, as well as Avid editing systems, and also that would include DS, Avid DS.
So, in fact, you've got clients that are using it almost as a photographic tool in Photoshop because they're an amateur photographer, and I believe you've got large installations of sort of multiple Avids that are using it as standard, at the high end for professional work on a day-to-day basis.
Yeah, it's funny because we get the full range. We get photographers with hardly any experience trying to make their photos look better, to professional photographers taking advantage of it, and then we've got editors. And guys who both shoot and edit who are using them, but it really kind of covers the entire gamut, because we have really low-end users who really don't have a whole lot of knowledge, all the way up to the people who are quite accomplished. And again, a lot of times, some of these plugins are very difficult to replicate in existing systems. I mean, some you just can't. Other ones, as you mentioned, you might be able to in a flame, but it would take you quite a bit of time. Our work, we bill on an hourly basis when we're doing effects work. So the faster you can do things, the better off. So even though you may know you can spend 10, 15, 20 minutes to set up an effect, if you can apply the plug-in, it only takes you 30 seconds to get it fleshed out. That becomes very important to the clients and them returning. And then it's a question of your time. If you're just the average Joe at home, you just want to be able to do it quickly.
Yeah, no, I think that's great. Have you looked at OFX, like the open standard for plugins that was developed by the Foundry that is being used by Nucoder and Scratch and Toxic?
Yes, we we are looking into it, and in fact, our programmer was one of the contributors to the format. So we are familiar with it, and you know, we would like to you know, start off by porting our 55 millimeter plugins because we think that, you know, it would definitely fit in with the, you know, the whole, you know, the digital intermediate systems like Nucota's putting out and the various systems. So, and of course, we'd like them to work in Toxic as well.
Yeah, that could be really interesting because that would open you up also, presumably if you wanted to floating point and open EXR formats.
Yeah, absolutely.
So let's move on to some of the other tools that are available, specifically the Digital Film Lab, because some confusion between the two sets of plugins, 55mm and Digital Film Lab, in some respects have some overlap, don't they?
Yes, there is. And essentially, Digital Film Lab is comprised of a handful of modules that are kind of cherry-picked out of 55mm, and they're put all into one plugin. And the advantage of doing that is by having those, you know, 8, 9, 10 modules from 55mm all in one place within Digital Film Lab, we've created a number of different, I don't know, 135, 140 different presets that are presetting all these modules, which normally you may have to layer up, say, 4, 5, or 6 plugins with various settings to achieve the same effect in 55mm. So I would look at Digital Film Lab as a companion product to 55mm in that you're able to create very complicated looks very quickly. You can load up our presets, you can modify them, save new ones after modifying them. So, you know, 55mm is up to about 62 different plugins right now. So really, Digital Film Lab takes a very small subset of those plugins, those modules from 55mm. So that's the difference between them.
And the composite suite, can you tell me about that? Because that's very much stuff that Digital Filmworks kind of had as effectively IP in-house, right?
Right, and you know, we look at composite suite as you know, kind of a Swiss Army knife of effects tools. There's color correctors, there's matte generators, there's plugins to you know, add smoke or flames to an image without the associated problems that you normally would get by trying to do it in traditional ways.
There's also some nice light wrap stuff, and
right, there's light wrapping, there's de-artifacting for DV. You know, of course, light is included as part of the composite suite. That was, you know, there's some overlap there. Yeah, between the light wrapping, there's edge compositing. So there's the type of compositing tools that, you know, you would use on a day-to-day basis, whether it be in you know, working on mats and cleaning up mats, to actually generating mats. And the mat generator that's in Composite Suite, we like to look at it as a mat generator that creates mats on footage that wasn't meant to have mats created from. So, in other words, if you want to do a blue or green screen, you would use our ZMAT gear, and which is a little bit different. But, you know, we've tried to put really the kind of the hardcore compositing tools in that original set, and that was our first set of plugins.
So let's talk about ZMAT, because I think there's a little bit of confusion. There used to be a company, ZBig, that had a Kia, green screen Kia. Now, that ended up folding into Ultimat. It was, and yet, it's just a coincidence, right, that this is called ZMAT. That's actually sort of nothing to do.
Yeah, you know, they've actually been gone for so long. You know, I think it was really a number of years. It has to be at least 2-3 years ago when it got wrapped into Ultimat, and the company bought them out. You know, we, in the course of our work, we use all kinds of different keyers, whether it's the Ultimat, Primat, Keylight. You know, there's a lot of keyers out there, but I think anybody who's done keying work knows there's not one keyer that works in all instances. And you know, we kept running up against footage that was very difficult to key with the traditional keyers. So we wanted to create a keyer that would work not only for the good footage, but for the footage that was shot terribly. Because we have, and a lot of times, we don't have control over what comes to us. We're just, a shot shows up, can you do it? So, again, this is ZMAT's another tool in our arsenal of tools for doing keys, and we've tried to load it up with as many features as possible for handling those really hard to deal with maps, whether it be, you know, edge compositing, being able to handle only the edge of the key, to de-artifacting for DV, to light wrapping, you know, color correction for the foreground, color correction only for the edge. So there's a number of different tools built all into that one keyer.
So can I ask you about that for a second? Because, say, DV Garage, they have a keyer which is great, and it works as basically a combined luminance and chrominance key to get around the subsampling problem that we get from DV footage, and for that matter, I think HDV footage. How do you solve the problem of DV footage having limited chrominance bandwidth?
Well, we use an algorithm that essentially converts to YUV, so we can separate the chrominance from the luminance channels and then separately blur the chrominance channels, which have half the color depth of a traditional television signal. So without that, if you try and use a keyer on DV footage, you normally get the jaggy edges on the transition area between your foreground object and the green screen or blue screen. And by blurring only the chrominance channels, you lose you get rid of the kind of jagged edge artifacting that you normally see from DV. You're able to smooth that out without blurring the luminance channels. So in other words, you're able to soften out the errors in the chrominance channels without actually blurring your foreground object.
Yeah, and similarly, the same kind of technology is applied for, like, the increasingly popular HDV?
Yeah, it's for HDV and also for regular HD footage as well. We've seen some of the same, not as bad artifacting with HD, regular HD, but you still have problems with HD, especially some of the compressed formats, and that's
so HD cam kind of thing. HD cam, yeah.
Just regular HD cam, yeah. It helps with the associated compression that you see there as well.
So I was just sort of on a timeline. You mentioned, stuff coming out. Just give us how long each of those modules has roughly been on the market. I mean, how long has ZMAT been out? You said, I think, Composite Suites was the first. When was that released?
Composite Suite was released in year 2000. And has gone undergone a number of revisions since then. About a year later, we came out with ZMAT, and then 6 months later, 55 millimeter, and then maybe a year after that, Digital Film Lab, and of course, we've had iterations and upgrades and new versions on all of those products since then.
Well, they're really good.
And initially, 55 millimeter was going to be a part of Composite Suite, and just like anything else, it just took a certain amount of time to develop, and we decided to wrap that into a separate product.
Well, they're great, and I thank you for talking through them with us today, and good luck. Is there any sort of hints of what's coming next in the sort of set of things?
We've got a version of 55 millimeter that's in the pipeline, and for instance, some of the new filters in that have to do, again, they're more photographically based. Like we have, the type of radial exposure distortion that you get with wide-angle lenses to correct for kind of dark edges and the vignetting that you normally get. 55 millimeter will now have the entire GAM color Gobo library, which will add it's about maybe 550 to 600 different light patterns from their, normally these are Gobos that you'd put in front of the light. We have their entire library converted, and that will be going in. We're doing some depth blurring and depth of field plugins, and so these are, rack focusing, the kind of bokeh effects. So we're concentrating on the rest of the photographic type of plugins that we don't have. So we're rounding out the set. We're up to about 10 new plugins, and we've had research underway which may or may not make it into the new version of 55 millimeter. It may be released afterwards, for instance, for removing reflection from an image. So it's pretty advanced stuff, and
removing reflections would be great, especially for car commercials.
Yeah, we're trying to move in the direction of creating plugins that are very difficult to copy.
Well, it is true that some interesting research in that reflection area would definitely not go astray. Are you showing this at Therefore at IBC, or is this stuff that's going to happen after IBC?
It's probably going to be right after IBC. We're almost done with 55 millimeter, but that's the good thing. The bad thing is that because we support so many different platforms and we like to release all at the same time, we usually develop for After Effects first because it's a little easier to develop for. Then we do Photoshop, we do Avid, we do Flame, and there's a lot of testing and associated kinks that have to be worked out on the various platforms. So, the actual code is pretty much done right now, but we have to kind of start working through all the various platforms. So we're probably looking sometime in October.
Well, that's good. We might actually come back then and do a review of those when they get released next. So,
great.
Thank you so much for your time. We really appreciate it. And
And thanks for having me.
Thanks for letting us have some fun with your plugins.
Thanks.
Talk to you later. Bye.
All right. Bye now.
Thanks for listening to this week's FX podcast. Please let us know if you have any suggestions for stories or future podcasts. You can reach us by using the Contact Us links at the top of the homepage. This podcast is copyright 2005 FX Guide LLC. Broadcast or redistribution is prohibited without the expressed written consent of FX Guide LLC.